This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the New Books Network. I'm your host, Steven Siegel, and today we're on the podcast channel New Books in Eastern European Studies with our guest, Lenny A. Ureña Valerio. Welcome, Lenny, to our podcast today.
Thank you, Steven. Thank you for inviting me to be part of the podcast series.
So I'm really excited to talk with Dr. Ureña Valerio today about her award-winning book. It's called Colonial Fantasies, Imperial Realities, Race Science, and the Making of Polishness on the Fringes of the German Empire, 1840 to 1920, published by Ohio University Press in 2019. A little bit about Dr. Ureña Valerio. She studied, had her BA in history at the University of Puerto Rico, and she received her PhD in Central East European history from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Her dissertation, The Stakes of Empire, Colonial Fantasies, Civilizing Agendas, and Biopolitics in the Prussian-Polish Provinces, 1840 to 1914, on which the book is based, was awarded the dissertation, Distinguished Dissertation Award in Polish Studies by PIASA, the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences of America, in 2010. Lenny's primary research and teaching interests include imperial colonial studies, European migration to Latin America, and I think what's really interesting, Polish diaspora studies in Brazil, the history of medicine and public health, as well as historical methods and theories. This book, as I mentioned, won several awards, won the Kulczycki Prize in Polish Studies in 2020, and earned honorable mention for the Barbara Helt Prize 2020 for AWSS, the Best Book by a Woman in Slavic, East European, Eurasian Studies. I'm really interested to talk about this book, and I have so many questions. So I would like to ask you, Lenny, just first of all, how you came to be interested personally and professionally and intellectually in the topic of Polish-German relations and colonial and imperial histories.
So as an immigrant who moved to Puerto Rico from the Dominican Republic at the age of 9, and then again in my early adulthood to the U.S. to do my PhD studies, I was always fascinated with the question of colonialism, migration, and race relations. How I moved from being a quote-unquote white Dominican to passing as Puerto Rican due to my light skin color, and then to a person of color in the U.S. made me become deeply interested in the fluidity of identities, particularly racial identities. So also studying at the University of Puerto Rico made me keenly aware of issues related to Puerto Rico's colonial relations with the U.S. and the struggle many face as second-class citizens, as poignantly pointed out in 2017 during the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, where so many people die in large part due to the slow response from U.S. authorities and the colonial relationship that still persists in the mainland with the mainland. So these personal experiences, as well as my exposure to the works of the South Asian School of Subaltern Studies, literary criticism and cultural studies. And when I started framing my project in the early 2000s, the then emerging field of German postcolonial studies, it is not so hard to imagine why I propose in the book today to do a postcolonial reading of 19th century Germany's eastern borderlands and of Polish and German cultural relations that helped me to put race and overseas colonies at the forefront of the analysis. So throughout the study of medical records, public health debates, and the mobility of diseases and peoples through the borders, through the borderlands, I study in my book how Poles were viewed as colonized others in Prussia and the German Empire, but I also study how invested Poles were, Polish nationalists were in colonial projects. And I studied this in Africa and Latin America, showing how prevalent colonialism was as a system of power in the 19th century and how colonial discourse and relations reverberated back to Europe.
Yeah. That's a great place to start with our conversation, because I think in many ways it's so important to think of Polish history and reconceptualize Polish history in terms of subjecthood and objecthood and the colonial question. I'm particularly interested in, I would really like to ask you about your travels to both Germany and Poland and how you gathered in your sources in Warsaw and Poznan, or let's say in Prussian Poland for the 19th century. So what led you there, and in which archives did you end up working?
Okay, so mainly my analytical framework, which I tried to do comparative and transnational history of Polish-German relations during the 19th century. So this analytical framework led me to work with primary sources in Polish, German, Portuguese, and sometimes even French in my attempt to understand these relationships from a global, transnational, and transregional perspective. So for those of the audience that are not familiar with Polish history, this is the time when Poland did not exist as a nation state, but was partitioned among the German, Russian, and Austro-Hungarian empires. So I am particularly interested in Prussian Poland, the territories acquired by the Kingdom of Prussia during the partitions of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth towards the end of the 18th century. So in my definition of Poland, I also include Upper Silesia, which Prussia acquired from Austria much earlier on, in a series of Polish measures that limited Polish language and culture in the different partitions, particularly in the Prussian Polish lands, along with political and economic transformation adopted at the time, pushed many Poles, particular peasants and dissidents, to migrate and form colonial settlements and ethnic enclaves, mainly in North America, of course, but also in South America. So given the different trajectories of the populations that I was studying, I follow this sources. Sorry, I'm going to stop and begin that. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, it's no problem. I'll just mark it. Go ahead. however you'd like to start it again.
Okay. So given the context of these movements of populations, so I decided to follow them through different archives, spending almost 2 years doing research in several archives in Germany and Poland, supplemented by one research visit to the Polish Library in Paris, and two research visits to Brazil, particularly to state archives in the city of Curitiba and Rio de Janeiro. In Germany, I mainly worked in Berlin in the Prussian Secret State Archives and the German Federal Archives. I also worked briefly in the military archives, which is a branch of the German Federal Archives in Freiburg. So in Poland, I visited several local state archives in cities that used to be part of the German Empire, such as Poznań, Opole, Torun, and Wrocław. But I found significant materials regarding Polish travels to Africa at the National Ossolinski Institute in Wrocław. And in fact, it was there when I had my Eureka moment and where I was able to clearly state the connections with colonial projects in Africa. And it was also in Wrocław that I met Antoni Kuczynski, an ethnologist and historian at the University of Wrocław, who had studied Polish ethnographic works in different parts of the world, especially in Africa and Asia. And he was so generous with me, not only by taking the time to meet with me, but also giving me copies of his book. And so his help and that of other Polish scholars and archivists really made a difference in the project. And it is not really until I was done with archival research in Europe that my source that led me to Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to get back to your Eureka moment because I see several of those, I think, in your book. I want you, if you can, to introduce our listeners to your chapters. The whole body of the monograph. Of course, you're covering both colonialism and imperialism, and I would say also the fantasies of empire and orientalism. How did you decide to arrange your chapters in the book? And of course, this is a 10-year project, as I understand it, from when you were writing your dissertation.
Okay, so the way I organize my chapters, I think it is best understood through the title of the book, which is, I realize, is a mouthful to say since it's so long, but it was the only way that I could find to communicate the main elements of the project. So in the book, I really tried to study colonial fantasies, so the part about colonial fantasies, imperial realities, refers to the tensions that I saw in my study between dreams of colonial dominance that some Germans had regarding Poles in the eastern borderlands, and the Poles themselves had regarding others in colonies. And I studied the very real constraints that unique imperial experiences in and outside Central Europe place on these dreams and or fantasies. So, for example, the colonial projection that Germans made onto Polish-speaking subjects encountered the fact that most of these Poles were actually Prussian citizens and had political representation in government. So they couldn't quite be they didn't have the same political status as a colonized in Africa, for example. And the colonial fantasies that Poles experienced in overseas colonies encountered the fact that they did not have the political machinery to fully colonize the territories and that they were operating within other imperial structures, whether it was in Africa or Brazil. So my intention in positing this colonial fantasy, imperial reality, is not to create a false dichotomy between colonial and imperial, since I see both processes as mutually related. What I wanted to do in my work was to stress the parallel in discourse that approach these two seemingly different territories, the Eastern borderlands and overseas colonies. I wanted to study the consequences of the discourse in supporting imperial agendas and contextualize and prove the limits of the colonial comparison. So in order to do that in the book, I studied these colonial relations in the Eastern borderlands through medicine. And the second part of my title, the part about race, refers to the modernization process in the 19th century that placed whiteness as the top quality to measure progress and the ways in which the German Empire sought to define itself biologically and culturally against multiple others. So it also alludes to the development of medicine and science and the center stage that racial discourses took in everyday relations and political interactions. And the way that I see race in the title, it resonates with the colonial fantasies part, not only because of the obvious relationship with overseas colonial dynamics, but also because while Poles were increasingly imagined as racialized others and members of a quote-unquote inferior race in Central Europe, their whiteness quality opened the doors to colonial settlements in Brazil and placed them among other Europeans in Africa. So how your racial worthiness changing depending on context points to and extend the fantasy of racial constructs. And, you know, I tried to see this in to study this by focusing in, I have a chapter about Africa and a chapter about Brazil. And then.
I wonder if we could learn from you, Lenny, about overseas colonialism and how that matters. I'm particularly fascinated in the chapters of your monograph by the careers of scientists and this medical discourse among explorers and experts. So could you talk a little bit about the medicine and disease and outbreaks and how these civilizing discourses come into and into the medical profession in waves? How does your book do that?
Yes, so for me, studying overseas colonialisms and the effect it had on modern European history and cultures is a passion and a political stance. It's a political stance because when I started thinking about my research questions, right, when I was applying for graduate school, colonialism was mainly studied as a footnote in European history, an episode with a beginning and an end, and as a result of political and economic conflicts. So knowledge tended to flow from civilized countries to developing countries. And so really the colonial impact was usually measured by looking at the infrastructure colonial powers left behind and whether or not natives had been assimilated. So this Eurocentric view of colonialism bothered me because it left out the consequences that colonial encounters had on Europeans themselves, and how colonial discourse and relations were reflected back into modernization projects, which I looked in the Eastern borderlands through medical reports and discourses about Polish-speaking subjects in the region. I really wanted to push back against this view of the colonial condition as a third world problem and colonialism as a practice that scholars tended to study outside of Europe. And I wanted to problematize the very heart of Europe itself. So it was really through medicine that I was able to uncover this colonial discourses. And then it was through Polish encounters with the colonial world during the partitions that allowed me to think about how overseas colonialism helped shape Polish national identity and nationalist agenda. So it also gave me the opportunity to examine the Polish lands comparatively across imperial divides and in dialogue with global developments. So in the book, I study these relationships in close, Polish colonial imagination in Africa in close relationship with Germany's imperial expansions in the 1880s. Usually, Germany was portrayed as a latecomer in colonialism. Sorry, let me stop there. So I studied these relationships and Polish colonial imagination in Africa in close relationship with Germany's imperial expansion in the 1880s, and usually portrayed as a latecomer in colonialism, Germany managed to secure overseas colonies in 1884 with the scramble of Africa through the acquisition of German Cameroon, which includes present-day Cameroon, northern parts of Gabon and Congo, parts of Nigeria, Chad, and Central Africa Republic. German also had possessed the land of Togoland, which is present-day Togo and parts of Ghana. And they also had a colony called German Southwest Africa, which is mainly present-day Namibia. And German East Africa, which is present-day Burundi, Rwanda, and mainland part of Tanzania. The empire also had colonial positions in the Pacific, and since 1898 had leased territories in China in the region of Jiaozhou Bay. So in the book, I follow Polish presence in this mainly German colony. I study the first Polish expedition to Africa led by Stefan Schulz-Rogoczynski, Leopold Janikowski, and Clemens Tomczyk in 1882. And this is an expedition that relied heavily on private funds, because obviously during the 19th century, Poland didn't have a nation state that could back up their colonial projects. And what is fascinating about this expedition that is stress the Polish character of the expedition, but also how in raising funds for it, these Poles make a explicit connection between science and knowledge with the colonial realm, and how
I think it's a really important point in your book. Could you talk about who sponsored those travels? Were they geographical expeditions? Which governments were involved? Because we're talking about the stateless nation of Poles at the time. So how did you uncover that?
Yes, so if we talk about Polish travels to Africa, these were the expedition that I was explaining that involved Schulz-Rogoczynski, who is the main proponent of this. It heavily relied on funds that they raised in what they call Polish societies. So different Polish publicists like Henry Sienkiewicz, and others sponsored this, but in the end, it was mainly using his Rogozhinsky's private fund that he was able to lease a ship and go to Africa. And then in the case of other Poles, many of them, they really went through other empires. And I studied the case of Jan Czekanowski, who in the early 20th century joined a German scientific expedition in East Central Africa. And that was sponsored by the German state. It was considered an expedition to survey the lands and learn more about the populations and learn more especially about the borderlands between the the Belgian Empire and the British Empire. So especially the area surrounding the Congo Free State. And so in terms of this colonial this travel and colonial projects, but many people and organizations were involved in the sense of the German Empire. These were supported by medical organizations and other institutions, museums, publicists, etc. And also in the case of Poles who traveled to Africa and other parts of the world, they also raise funds through giving presentations and sending cultural artifacts back to researchers in the different lands of the partition Poland. So that is interesting because it shows the circulation of this colonial knowledge and bringing it back to Eastern Europe.
Yeah, and I think it's wonderful that you mentioned Czekanowski, especially because there's so much interesting work being done on Polish colonialism and neocolonialism and anthropology and ethnography, this world of epistemic anxieties, which I think you capture so well. And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, if I may, about your later chapters. So chapter 4 is called For Your Freedom and Ours, about Polish travel accounts and colonial fantasies in Africa. And then chapter 5, which I think is wonderful, and I hope you continue to write about it, the establishment of Polish colonies in Brazil. So I'm absolutely intrigued how you begin to connect these different areas in the Global South, and how you study this particular research. I'm not sure if I could call it diasporic research, but How would you explain this story of Paraná in southern Brazil and the establishment of other new Polands? What can our listeners learn from this late 19th and early 20th century story?
So it's interesting that you asked that question because when I came back from the archives, the first chapter that I wrote was the chapter about Polish travel accounts and colonial fantasies in Africa. And I was excited after coming back to have found a body of literature that gave me access to study involvement in overseas colonies, but also the anxieties portrayed in the travel literature, in the memoirs, in the reports, etc. And this description of the colonized on the one side, like this proximity that they were portraying, like as a good that they understood very well the oppression in the colony because of the relationship that they had vis-a-vis empires in Europe. But at the same time, they're distancing themselves in the way that they're presenting themselves as, you know, as superior to the colonized. So I was fascinated by this, like, dualism in the discourse. And also, I was also interested by the how the colonies in you know, at the height of imperialism, gave Poles the methods or rhetoric to intersect themselves within the civilized nations, European nations, and you know, positing themselves vis-a-vis other Europeans. But, you know, what I was missing from that account was the actual colonial project, the actual settlement of Poles, which I found in Brazil. And because Brazil has the second largest diaspora of Poles in the world, in the state of Paraná. So I was interested in projects of modernization in Brazil that sought to attract European colonies as a way to whiten the nation and modernize the nation. And it was something that the Brazilian Empire implemented right away after becoming independent from Portugal in 1822. And the model of that colonization, the people that they looked to were Germans. So the whole
imitation
plan in Brazil was really, even though there were not, in the end, there were not a huge majority of colonies, but it was structured around them, which I found interesting. And it is through, you know, the migration of Germans that you also have Poles migrating as early on as, 1850s, and they will be in mixed colony, you know, along with other Germans, and apparently that wasn't a problem. But then in the 1860s, you start seeing plans to develop Polish colonies. And it is in the state of Paraná, and that I study in my book, where this concept of a new Poland emerges. And it's interesting because the first Poles to migrate are Poles from Upper Silesia, and they were like the colonies of the first colonies that ended up being called the New Poland. And so, but then in the 1890s and early 20th century, this migration started. There were German Poles or Russian Poles were joined by Poles from the other partitions, from the Polish Kingdom and from Galicia, etc. So it's interesting to see, and what I was interested in when I was writing that chapter is to see the reactions and responses of the Polish nationalists, and they're the one, promoting this new Poland, and as a clear way at the end of the 20th century, attract this colony towards the support imperial imaginations of Polish cultural expansion. It's fascinating to see it that early on.
I want to ask you, Lenny, because to cover all of your chapters, I can't let you get away without talking about eugenics and the Catholic Church. I see this kind of moment in the 1890s as a turn toward mass politics. I mean, obviously, you know, Brian Porter and Jerzy Jedlicki and others have written about this and the world of Catholic Poland. So do you see a strong role of the Catholic Church and for that matter, eugenicist discourses of the 1900s and 19-teens in some of these communities and especially for Paraná in Brazil? How did you go about studying this, you know, national body discourse of who belongs in Poland and who supposedly doesn't?
Mm-hmm. So in the colonies itself in Brazil, I didn't have the sources to look at those relationships because I was mainly focused on you know, scientists, geographers, and that side. But I, you know, the Catholic Church played an important role in the Prussian Polish provinces, and it's there where I saw collaborations. Not saying that it's not happening in Brazil, it's just that I didn't see them in my sources. And you know, you have to take into consideration that this is my introduction to the topic that I hope to continue. And so I plan to pay more careful attention to those topics. But it's really in the Prussian Polish territories that the Catholic Church played an important role articulating notions of community belonging and Polishness in the region. And I saw it in Poznań and Silesia, Upper Silesia. And so it is all due because of all these colonial discourses and Germanizing agendas where, you know, Poles tended to be double attack for the Polish identity and for the Catholic identity. The Kulturkampf, exactly. So it's interesting to see it from the medical point of view because oftentimes the Catholic practices were reasons for Polish backwardness. And also you see the role that they're playing in Brazil from the point of view of schooling system, so many, and also maintaining the religion there, which I think gave the Polish identity to the colonies. I've always been fascinated by the fact that when you know, people coming from multi-ethnic regions in Europe at the end of the 19th century, and you see it in Latin America, they start to settle. There's a moment, which in my book I trace to the 1860s, where there's this ethnic identity. So Jews start to migrate using Jewish networks and well, they're settled more in the cities, but you see it clearly in the Polish case, how they start to separate themselves from Germans. And but they're also mixed colonies. But going back to the Catholic Church and the eugenic movement, so you, in the early 20th century, you start seeing all this discourse and cultural and racial anxieties that are shown on the side of German nationalists, but also Polish nationalists. So that you start seeing the institutionalization of eugenic ideas, which Polish physicians in the Prussian Polish provinces start to join and also adapt and establish chapters. And they established the first, the first Polish organizations of partition Poland. So that, and it's in response to this also eugenic ideas and anti-Polish measures and discourses that are in, you know, in advanced by German nationalists in the eastern borderlands. And so I also saw Polish physicians working with the Catholic Church to bring this modernizing press and racialized discourses to the population. Physicians training priests in order to offer better counsel and also getting the knowledge to uplift the population, especially in rural areas where sometimes a physician wasn't readily available. So, you know, you have the priest taking upon himself this civilizing mission of uplifting the population.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you sort of a final question, if we can lead into the literature on medicine and expansion or Eurocentric or European expansion. There's so much interesting work that you have in your wonderful bibliography and footnotes, I'd say, dealing with Brazilian medicine or Indian medicine, and I think connecting a lot of that work on medicine and disease and biopolitics to the earlier stuff on colonial fantasies. I'm thinking of Suzanne Xanthrop's work, for instance. I wonder if you could talk about your sort of vision for historiography and for this kind of research on medicine and empire, particularly for the Polish case, because one can ask questions about colonialism, but some have also argued that, you know, parties like peace in Poland are colonizing themselves. This is a self-colonization of Poland. So I guess my question is really about your work on medicine and empire and what sort of things you would like to see for future research.
Well, I think there's still so much to be researched regarding the post-colonial framework that I use in the book. For example, I was not able to study German or Polish women's involvement in these colonial fantasies. So my study in the end is mainly about men and their fantasies. And so that's the gender aspect. It's one that would be fascinating to see, because in the literature that I encounter, Polish women are seen as the greatest polonizer. So studying their positionality in these civilizing discourses and colonial discourses will be interesting. I also find it interesting the works that other people are doing in the interwar period, when, you know, the Second Polish Republic is established, and then, you know, these fantasies are more a reality with colonial projects that are, you know, coming from colonial proponents and the state itself. So I think we're going to get, and we're already getting, like, a good exposure of that, and I'm happy to see how my work is also connected to that. And the other thing that I think...
Yeah, and maybe you could talk about your work on Brazil, if you can, like, and if you could recommend others' research. I mean, especially yours on Brazil. I understand you have a new project, yes.
Yes, so in terms of the research on Brazil, it's fascinating what Brazilian colleagues, especially from, you know, Paraná, Santa Catarina, Rio Grande do Sul, the places where you have this descendants of Poles, they're doing interesting work on the schooling system, especially during the Estado Novo in the 1930s, where, you know, the Getúlio Vargas stopped the instruction in the colonist language, which many Poles suffer because some of them had not had exposure to Portuguese or needed to because they were in rural isolated colonies. So there's interesting work being done about the schooling and system and how there's this image of an uneducated Pole, which it's interesting to see vis-a-vis my work where Poles were considered Europeans and was part of the civilized brothers of nations, if you want to put it like that.
Yeah. And the European white fraternity, right?
Yes. The European fraternity.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So seeing how Poles and Polish descendants struggle later on and how these images shifted, I'm interested in looking at that as well. And when does this start? How it might be, how sometimes people might be going back from that experience in the 1930s and 40s, portraying a negative image of Pole back in the 19th century. Those are questions that I have. And I also want to study those colonies in the 19th century where you have a more mixed population, to see how, what kind of interactions, how Polish identity plays out in, or if there's like a national indifference. So.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And marriages too, right? Especially between Germans and Poles or Polish Catholics and Jews or, I think it's so dependent on place, right? And I think sometimes as a cartographer of all of the locations, small towns across the Americas, which were named after Polish towns and Polish cities, and Germans too, or for that matter, Italian or anything in the European context. So we're kind of running out of time, Lenny, and I just wanted to conclude and ask if you could talk about your current projects or current research. I see that you have an article that's coming out on the global and the local and Jewish experiences in the Americas. So could you tell our listeners what you're interested in and working on now?
Well, actually, that's an edited volume, which I just finished co-editing. It's the title, hopefully it will be published the end of this year, beginning of next year. And the title is The Global and the Local in Jewish Experiences in the Americas, All and New Narratives Across Five Centuries. And it's based on a conference that I help organize here, the University of Florida, on the Jewish diaspora to Latin America. And the volume seeks to connect this local, well, it moves from the local to the global, seeking to connect not only Jewish studies with Latin American studies, but also offering a global history of the Americas through Jewish cases, if that makes sense. And so in given the career path that I took and that led me to Latin American studies. So I as I told you, I plan to continue doing work on the Polish diaspora in Brazil, but also I'm interested in studying other parts of Latin America, be it Polish migration or German migration. So I think the the position that I have in the Center for Latin American Studies, the students that I'm currently advising, and the networks that I'm creating there, it's obvious for me it's easier to move towards Latin America than, researching and going back to Poland, which I hope to go back, of course, and I will go back, but more and more gravitating towards Latin America.
So I wanted to thank our guest on the podcast today for New Books Network, Leni Ureña Valerio, for joining us and for talking about her new book. The book is called Colonial Fantasies, Imperial Realities, Race Science, and the Making of Polishness on the Fringes of the German Empire, 1840 to 1920, published by Ohio University Press in 2019. Thanks so much, Leni, for joining us today.
But thank you so much, Stephen, and thank you for your questions. They were very helpful in, bringing all these stories together in my mind again, and it was a very fruitful exercise. Thank you.
And thanks again to all of our listeners here on the New Books Network and our podcast channel, New Books in Eastern European Studies. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. Until next time.